Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Gabby Roslin.
Hello, Sam Pinkham. We're here sitting in for Mr. Evans on this week's edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up,
the super talented duo of Stephen Graham and Jack McMullen wow and intrigue us with news of their BBC One drama, Time.
The king of showbiz, Les Dennis, gets our toes tapping with all the latest on his return to the West End for Hairspray the musical.
The hilarious Nick Mohammed gets us thinking and giggling with tales from series two of his hit show, Intelligence, on Sky One.
And the acting powerhouse that is Papa Essiadu gets under the skin of his new Channel 5 drama, Anne Boleyn.
Oh, it's so good, so good. All of that and so much more to come. Now, Dapper Dave, tell us, who's our first guest?
If you want powerhouse performances from the best of British, then look no further. The new Jimmy McGovern drama, Time, starts this Sunday on BBC One. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to have a fine time talking about Time, so pay attention, because it'll be over in no time as we welcome Stephen Graham and Jack McMullen!
Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Oh,
oh, they're back in. They're back in the nick.
Yeah. How did you time
that
police siren? That was good.
Who's got it, Jack or Stephen? Who's got the siren?
I think that might be me.
That's you.
Jack, where are you? You've been nicked.
That was brilliant timing. Thanks for sorting that out for live radio. Welcome both of you. So lovely to speak to you, and thank you so much. We had a sneaky look at the series. Wow, it is phenomenal. Stephen, Jimmy McGovern piece, Time. Obviously, the trails have been going out again and again and again. Tell us all about it, please, Stephen.
It's a story about these two men, ordinary men, who are thrust into extraordinary circumstances, really. You follow Sean Bean's character. Sean's magnificent in this. And he's a teacher who commits crime and is put into prison, and then you kind of follow his journey and how he has to cope and survive. And then running alongside that parallel is my character Eric and his story. I play a prison warden and prison officer, and I'm kind of faced with these dilemmas and my moral compass is put into question. Do you know what I mean? As I face these circumstances which are beyond my control, really. So it's kind of how they both deal with life in the prison.
What's so incredible about this, Stephen, is that all of the clichés obviously come out, and I apologise now for calling it gritty, but it's gritty, it's real, it's raw.
Thank you, Gabby.
But it's also heartbreaking. I mean, you and your wife, and your real wife in this, and your real wife, Hannah, there are some scenes between the two of you where I was in bits and I was crying. I mean, it's just incredible. Congratulations on this, Stephen. Another award-winning show.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
All of you, the whole cast. I mean, this is...
Yes, that's it, Gabby, as well. Do you know what I mean? As an ensemble cast, I mean, I know you've got these two characters who you follow in their story, but the ensemble cast with some amazing talent, the likes of, you know, Jack, obviously, who's speaking in a minute. You've got Jack, you've got Bobby Schofield, James Nelson Joyce. We've got a wonderful cast of young men, and just every single character. Jimmy's writing is brilliant. It's you know, some of the best I think we have in this country, and his characters are always three-dimensional. And then throw in a brilliant, talented young director, Lewis Arnold, in the mix, and then it just creates a lovely playground for those actors to really create. You know what I mean? And just feel you trust the director implicitly. Lewis just created this wonderful atmosphere on set, and it was just a great joy to do, actually. I know it's really heavy and gritty and hard, but we did have a laugh, didn't we, Jack? We had a right laugh on set as well.
Yeah, we filmed right in the middle of the second lockdown. I think we were all just delighted to be out of the house.
Oh, that's it. You're out of the house, but you're certainly locked down. Yeah. You're locked in and locked down.
Jack, you're cell-sharing with Sean Bean. What was that like?
Obviously, brilliant to work with Sean. What I really enjoyed was that I feel like our two characters are at opposite ends of their relationship with their own grief. So that was something that I enjoyed exploring. It was lovely to work with Sean and Stephen. And Stephen said there, Lewis Arnold, such a brilliant director. I was really excited to work with him as well.
The thing about it is, it's so good. The acting in it is so good that you're so drawn in as a viewer that you can't escape the story when you try to leave your TV. And I watched the first episode one with my dad, and my dad couldn't continue because he was so drawn in by what would I do if I was in this situation.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Yeah. Thanks, Adam. That's what we're after, isn't it, Jack? That kind of look. You know, I feel very blessed to do the job I do, and I love it, and I'm extremely grateful that I'm allowed to do this job. But in the respect of something like this, you know, you try and be selective and choose the work where you can, not just the entertainment of what it is, but if you can come into someone's living room and just make them think for a split second, you know what I mean?
Guys, thank you so much for coming on to join us. We could talk to you all day. Jack, Stephen, please never break the law.
Congratulations,
you've had an insight into how bad it could be, Jack.
Thank you. Yeah, oh, no, I never want to end up in there.
Absolutely not.
I mean, that's just saying as well, Jack and the other young lads, I know I mentioned them before, but their performances, Gab, as you said, their performances are phenomenal. And I'm not being funny. They play these characters so beautifully with so much truth and integrity. And they're some of the most wonderful fellas I've ever met in my life. And just the amount of pride I had watching them. There was a scene that Jack does, and I was in awe. I was sitting there watching them. And then I was like, oh yeah, I've got to say a line now. Because he was just magnificent.
He really
and Bobby
is.
And all the other boys, all the other lads, they were absolutely outstanding.
Who's
just
him?
A giving a shout out to James Joyce and Bobby Schofield there.
Who's the terrifying one who bops Sean Bean on the nose?
James Joyce, and he's probably one of the most loveliest fellas you'll ever meet.
No, he's not. No, he's terrifying. He's terrifying.
No, he's not.
No, I won't hear it another way.
We believe you, but congratulations to all the cast. Actually, seriously, please congratulate everybody and Lewis, the director, and Jimmy. It really is outstanding. 5 stars across
thank
the board. The previews have been amazing.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, gents. Yeah, have a great weekend. Happy anniversary, Stephen.
Happy anniversary.
Ta-da.
Cheers.
Time starts this Sunday, the 6th of June, 9 p.m, BBC One. All three availables will be available after that on BBC iPlayer.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
It's a showbiz dream to be married to Michael Ball, and our next guest has made that dream come true. He's hitting the stage as Wilbur Turnblad when Hairspray the Musical returns to the West End. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the light entertainment heavyweight that is the legendary Les Dennis!
Oh, Les!
Good morning, Sam, Gabby, and David. That wasn't smug at all. That was a lovely introduction.
He can be, though,
no,
Les.
No, he can't be.
No, he can be. Ignore
Sam.
He knows he's... Les, I've been on the tube with him. Do you remember, Dave? We were on the tube once and a couple of young ladies walked on and they just stared at him. And I went, look... And he said, that happens quite a lot.
No!
You know
That's
what?
That's not true.
Les, they're making it all up. How are you, lovely Les?
I'm really, really well, thanks, Gabby. Really, it's a lovely morning and we're in rehearsals for Hairspray and I couldn't be happier. So it came at the last minute for me, this show, and I'm really excited to be reprising my role as Wilbur Turnblad, and I get to snog Michael Ball 8 times a week.
Oh, you see, there's in every single way I'm excited about this because it's a return to live shows, which I love, but also this is one of my favourite musicals.
It's a fantastic musical, and it's a really timely musical. It's so now, it's about the 60s, it's about integration, and it's so timely right now and joyous, and I think we can't wait to get back into the theatre. The Coliseum Theatre is the biggest theatre in London, and we will at first from the 21st of June start with socially distanced performances, but once we get the go ahead, you know, as many people as want, I think it's up to 3,000 that can fill that theatre. We can't wait for that sound of applause, of laughter, of just joy, you know?
Les, how do you socially distance kiss Michael Ball? Or are you in the same, you know?
We're in our bubble.
You're in your bubble.
We're in our own little bubble, me and Michael, so we can do that. And, you know, there's no way they couldn't because Edna and Wilbur and Tracy Turnblad, they're a force as a family. You know, Wilbur is a lovely part to play because he is this loving dad and husband. You know, there's a point where Edna says that, you know, that the joke shop is your life. And he says, no, you two are my life. my two funny honeys. He loves them so much. And so it's, you know, I get to do a wonderful song duet with Michael Ball, Your Timeless to Me, which is just joy every night, because I did it when it came out of the West End last time, which is about 13 years ago now. We went on tour with it. So it hasn't been in the West End for a good 12, 13 years. So it's just great to bring it back.
Do you know what? I'd quite like to be in that showbiz bubble. Wouldn't that be a bubble to be in? Les Dennis on one side and Michael Ball on the other. Yes, please.
It's great.
I can't wait to see it. I'm going to be there. I actually might come every night because I love it that much. Oh. The songs are brilliant. They just make you feel good as well. It's a proper uplifting show with Michael Ball.
It starts with Good Morning Baltimore and it goes right through You Can't Stop the Beat and Welcome to the 60s. Just great song.
Now, we want to find out if this is a true story or not. Something I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, Les, is it true? Is it true that you use your this is delightful. You're delightful. Your fingernails as toothpicks.
Oh, this is going to haunt me, isn't it?
It really is.
This came from when I was on Would I Lie to You, and I'd done really well, and then all, you know, nobody guessed anything that any of my true stories. They all thought they were false, and then this one came up, somebody found it somewhere. It's something I've stopped doing since I did the show. I just find that, I mean, it's recycling.
Oh, my please, yes, you know,
yes.
I've known you long enough. I didn't know this about you. It's just, no.
Okay, so how does it, I mean, I know this is slightly screwed, but how does it work? Do you clip them or do you bite them off first and then just use them?
No.
Well, we need to know, Gabs. No. We need to know.
They're slightly clipped and then they're just, it's like a better toothpick. You can get in, but I don't do it anymore. I've stopped.
No, I don't believe you. If this rumour was out there about me, I would say I don't do it anymore. Of course you do.
The reaction on social media was mixed. Some people admitted to doing it themselves, and other people were like, oh my God. And then other people were like, what? Your toenails? And I go, no, not my toenails.
It is. You'd be very good at yoga.
We all kind of like stick our teeth in, our fingernail in, don't we, when they're on.
Yeah,
oh, exactly.
Do you know what difference
is it just removing? Yeah.
It's still clean. It's the removing bit, Les.
Do you never
come
use
on
your hair, Gabs? Because your hair would be great, great at flossing.
No, would just ping.
Oh, would it ping? Oh, would it ping?
No, just use floss for flossing. Thank you very much, Les Dennis. Thank you very much. It'd be one of those ones on Family Fortunes. It would be,
it would be, and I'd have to say, I'll give you the money myself.
Yeah, oh, there he said his catchphrase. Perfect. Do it again. Go on, say it again.
If it's up there, I'll give you the money myself.
There, and you did do it. Didn't you have to do it once?
I did have to do it once. There was the question was, name a way of toasting somebody. And what would you say?
Toasting somebody?
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, yeah. Bottoms up. Okay.
Nostrovia.
But we got, this woman said, over an open fire. And I said, if it's up there, I'll give you the money myself. And it was answer, it was worth £12, so it must have been one of the lower answers. But it was there. Of our 100 people, 12 people said it.
What?
And you gave them the money.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Isn't it?
Luckily, it was only £12. It wasn't the jackpot.
So now, the hairspray opens. You're going to be socially distanced at first, and then everybody's going to, hopefully, more and more people will see it. Will you do me a favour? Will you send lovely Michael my love and just remind him not to get his boobs out all the time? Because he did that to my daughter. He showed my daughter. No, don't look at me like that, Sam.
He did what?
No, because, Les, explain. It's not his own bosoms.
No, it's not his own
Edna.
Bosom. He's Edna. He's dressed as Edna. And, he is Edna. Once he becomes Edna, he's Edna. The same as the famous Dame Edna, you know, becomes Edna once that the glasses and everything go on. I will tell him most definitely not to do that.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Tell me not to get my fingernails out.
Yes, no fingernails from you and no boobs from Michael Ball.
Okay, so Hairspray the Musical returns to the West End on Monday the 21st of June at the London Coliseum, and it'll run until the 29th of September. Les, what an absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming
on the
show.
Thank you, Les.
Love you, Les.
Great to talk to you.
Cheers. Bye.
Have a great day.
Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Comedy comes as naturally as breathing for our next guest, and he's about to exhale. Series 2 of Sky One's superb comedy Intelligence returns on Tuesday. And here to tell us more is a man that's on to a winner-winner with David Schwimmer. It's the star of the show, Nick Mohammed!
Woohoo!
Oh, my arms flew in the air because I am such a super fan, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Gabby. Thank you for that. Thanks for that intro as well. That was nice.
Oh, it's so funny. You are one of those people that, you know, when people talk about funny bones, you literally have funny bones.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't know if that's true, but, you know, that's very kind of you to say. I'm glad you like the show, that's for sure.
Well, I like everything you do. But you've written, you've directed, you star in Intelligence, it's coming to Sky One. It's season two. If season two could be any better than season one, it's going to go through the roof.
Well, hopefully. I mean, the pandemic obviously shifted our filming a little bit, but it did mean, it weirdly meant that I could spend a little bit longer on the scripts, and so I guess we maybe even pored over them. I mean, you know, we pore over them a lot anyway, but we probably pored over them more than was maybe even necessary. So in a way, I've got sort of no excuse for not delivering, certainly on the scripts and stuff. And I should just say that I actually didn't direct it. A brilliant guy called Matt Lipsey directed it, who's wonderful and makes it look amazing.
So you write it, you're in it, and also apparently you and David Schwimmer, you don't call him David Schwimmer, do you? You call him Schwim.
I call it Schwim, but I only call him Schwim because that's how he once signed off one of his emails, and so I thought, well, I might as well. I can call him that now. But it does sometimes feel strange to call him Schwim.
Nick, for people who don't know, can you tell us the story of Intelligence and tell us, basically what happens and where it all came from?
Yes, so it's essentially a workplace sitcom set in GCHQ, which is sort of the government... Well, it's not sort of the government communication headquarters. It's exactly what it is. So it's sort of the slightly... It's quite computery. They deal with a lot of cybercrime and cybersecurity and so on. And so it follows this gang of misfits who work specifically in the cybercrime department, the cybersecurity department. And then David plays an NSA agent, kind of the equivalent organisation, but in the States, who is sort of forced to join the team as part of sort of a global sort of shared intelligence initiative, or at least that's how he sort of presents himself in the first instance. And he has a completely different approach, a very kind of maverick approach. He's loosely, we can kind of say now that he's sort of loosely based on Trump. And he, you know, his arrival just, throws everything into disarray. And then my character, I play a junior analyst, sort of takes a real shine to him. Almost looks up to him like in a kind of older brother kind of way, and they just get up to a series of mishaps, basically. And so, that's kind of what the show's about. And it came about partly. So I had a script commission from Expectation who make the show, and I'd always found the idea funny. I was a big fan of things like The Office and so on. I loved the idea of writing a workplace sitcom, which, you know, focuses on some of the kind of mundane aspects of working in an office environment, but then putting it against, you know, the backdrop of the huge stakes in national security, that always sort of found, you know, I found the kind of base joke of that quite funny, just because what they do is so important. And so, yeah, and it sort of took off from there. I remember sending the one-page treatment over to David, because we'd done some improv workshop things on another pilot a year or so before then. So we had met, and we just got on really well and enjoyed sort of doing a lot of improv, and particularly the dynamic that we enjoyed playing was just me playing this sort of quite sort of shy, sort of diminutive British guy, and him playing this quite alpha male Republican sort of American guy. And that was effectively the basis of the sort of Jerry Joseph relationship that you then see in the show.
Now, you talk about ad-libbing, but there is ad-libbing in the show, isn't there? I know you write
there
it,
is,
but
yeah.
There's,
is
yeah.
there?
Yeah, there's
oh,
a huge
know this.
Percentage of it.
Is there?
Well, it's weird. Some of it kind of varies. So we always allow for it in the schedule. So some of the sequences, which are when there's sort of, you know, five or six people around the table talking, because they were so quite complicated to film, because there's so many different eye lines, and particularly with COVID, because you have to really sort of minimize the number of cameras and crew that we could have in the room as well for this season. But a lot of those we ended up having to stick to the script quite heavily, but then often at the very end we would then just sort of improvise a sort of version of the scene just to see if anything kind of fun came off the back of it. And particularly when there was two-handers or three-handers, David's an amazing improviser. So is Jane Stannis, who plays Mary, Elliot. So, I mean, they all are, to be honest. But we would always allow time and have a little play afterwards just to see. Not it wouldn't always result in anything you think, yeah, we're going to definitely use that. But sometimes it really did. And it's just a nice thing because it creates a real... There's a little sort of twinkle in our eyes when it happens. You can probably see it.
I bet it's just when somebody comes out with a golden line, you must just fall on the floor. How do you hold it together if somebody says an improv line?
I don't. I just don't, Sam. No, I'm the absolute worst. I think with COVID, it did make things more difficult, and you are maybe inherently a bit more focused, and obviously everyone's wearing masks in between takes. All the crew are wearing masks throughout anyway. So it's usually that thing. If you see someone else starting to smile or laugh, that often makes you go a bit. But I'm just dreadful. I mean, even the smallest thing, I'll get distracted. You know, even if it's not even that funny, just like a noise coming from sort of somewhere that I wasn't expecting will kind of distract me and take me out of it and make me laugh. It was very unprofessional.
I said, you have funny bones, and I love that you're a giggler. We've both seen episode one of the new season, which starts next week, and it is so funny.
Oh,
so you absolutely, you got it right.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Oh, thank you.
If you want to watch series one, if you haven't seen any of it, then you can just say intelligence into your Sky remote control and it pops straight up on the screen. It's exactly what I did yesterday. But we love it, Nick. Thank you so much for coming on. Best of luck. Nick Mohammed.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We've heard from three undeniably magnificent guests already, but there's still lots more to come.
The Fratellis frontman, John Fratelli, shines a much-needed light on grassroots music venues in Sky Arts' new three-part series, The Live Revival. It's absolutely brilliant.
The lovely Lorraine Candy helps us navigate those notoriously tricky teenage years with her new book, Mum, What's Wrong With You?
The gut health guru Gabriella Peacock turns the pages of her comprehensive health and well-being guide, 2 weeks to feel great.
The dreamy space ace Professor Brian Cox takes his galaxy-sized brain on tour across the UK with Horizons, a 2021 space odyssey.
And our main man in Formula One, David Crofty Croft, puts his foot on the commentary accelerator ahead of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix.
All of that and more still to come. So let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
He grappled with gangsters in Gangs of London on Sky and is now tackling the Tudors on Five. The brand new drama, Anne Boleyn, starts tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on Channel 5. So ladies and gentlemen, listen up as we kindly ask that Papa do preach, as this is an interview. It's the majestic Papa Esiedu!
Hey!
Thank you.
Oh, Papa. Hello, my lovely.
Hello, darling. You all right?
Yeah, really well. Last time I spoke to you was about Gangs of London. Oh, how good was that show? But now, excuse me, Anne Boleyn, Channel 5 is phenomenal.
Oh, did you like it?
I loved it. So I've seen part one. Sam has seen part one and part two.
Oh, the end of episode two. There's obviously, I mean, for Gabby and I were just chatting about it off air. They're saying there's no spoilers, but we all know what ultimately happens. And at the end of episode two, it's just terrifying.
It is, isn't it?
It's fantastic. So how was it to film this?
Yeah, it was amazing. Look, we filmed it kind of towards the end of last year, so we're all still deep in lockdown. So it was kind of surreal to be, you know, outside of your house, do you know what I mean? Let alone kind of like in a beautiful Tudor castle, dressed in like Tudor garbs, retelling like one of the most famous stories ever told. So yeah, it was kind of wonderful.
But what's so different about this is I think we've seen parts of the story before, but this, it's very modern, but it's still, it has the essence of then. It's incredibly written.
Yeah. Eve, our writer, is very talented. But I think, like, a real focus for her was to kind of center Anne's story, because like we're so used to kind of seeing that story told through Henry VIII's eyes or Thomas Cromwell's eyes. We often see Anne as a kind of side character, but she's like an incredibly majestic, powerful, fascinating individual. So we really wanted to center her experience and see how that affected the way the story was told.
I mean, you just use the word powerful. She really was. And the way it's played, I mean, you as well. I have to say, you are compelling in this.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm making you blush. I can tell.
I'm with you.
I can hear you blushing.
It certainly is.
It's brilliant. So this must have been a really easy yes when they asked you to do this.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, I knew that Jodie had been attached to the project and been a fan of hers for so long and thought it was such... like you say, such a kind of refreshing and courageous idea to cast her as this character. And I could immediately imagine it and then kind of like coming face to face with her queen Anne. It kind of like went over all my expectations. It was wonderful.
So what was it like to work with her? Because obviously when you met, she's as intimidating in real life as she is as playing Queen Anne.
She's a sweetheart. Nah, she's like, obviously, look, she's like Jodie Turner-Smith. She's Hollywood. She's glamorous, but like, slowed down to earth. She had her baby on set for the whole time we were shooting. So
no!
She's a mother as well, you know? So, yeah. Like, obviously, lots of the themes in the show kind of concern motherhood as well. So it was good to have someone who was just real with it.
So this was her baby. I remember, was it the Oscars? There was an amazing photo of her in a yellow dress when she was very pregnant. That's that baby.
Yeah. That baby. It was a beautiful baby as well.
And how old is the baby?
I think the baby will probably be about 9-10 months by now. She was really little when we were filming. She was like maybe 3-4 months.
And the baby was just on set, but somebody else was looking after her. Sorry, has she got a boy or a girl?
A girl. Yeah, the baby was a real star of the show.
That's really cute.
I love that. The baby's the star of the show.
Cool.
Love
that.
So, Papa, as well, obviously, you were Hamlet and rave reviews to that. Is it true that you talked to David Tennant because he'd also played Hamlet?
Yeah, I had a chat with David. I knew David a little bit because we'd nearly worked together before. So I remember he was doing Richard II, I think, and I went to watch it. We had a little chat in his dressing room. Because, I mean, I kind of, like, grew up watching him, you know, him doing Doctor Who, and I think I'd seen his Hamlet a few times on DVD. So I was like, have you got anything that's going to stop me from falling flat on my face?
You didn't fall flat on your face at all. That's a role to take on, isn't it?
Yeah, it was an experience of a lifetime, a real turning point for me.
And Papa, where was this filmed? Where was Anne Boleyn filmed?
It was filmed in Bolton Castle in Yorkshire, North Yorkshire.
And so in lockdown, must have been strange. Was everybody walking around behind the cameras with masks and what have you? Yeah, it must have been.
Everyone's wearing masks. Like, it was a kind of thing of like, if you even like touched a plate or a spoon or whatever, that had to be like disinfected. It was weird, but like, it was also wonderful because like, none of us had seen anyone for like 6 months. So even though we had people behind masks, behind those like visor things, it was like kind of beautiful to be away from home and with people in a time when, you know, we all felt like we were going mad in our living rooms.
Do you know the whole thing about Tudor times? Even my 14-year-old daughter, she just knows so much because they learn about it in school. Mm. So all kids watching as well. It's just, we're absolutely obsessed with Tudor times, aren't we?
We are. I remember when I was at school, I used to read Horrible Histories. And there's a really good Tudor one. And it's kind of fascinating, you know, you can kind of, You can get distracted or at least like interested in, you know, Henry VIII and his wives and, you know, Wars of Roses and all of that. It's all like blood and gore and roughs in it. So, I mean, that's enough to hold your attention for at least 10 minutes.
You mentioned Horrible Histories. That's just brilliant. The minute anyone mentions that, just makes us all smile. It's the best thing.
And if you took nothing from a history lessons at school, it was divorce, Divorced, beheaded,
died.
Divorced, beheaded, survived, wasn't it? Yeah. I think it's the only thing I took from my crazy history teacher.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got an A star in yours.
That's it, exactly.
Oh, but this is brilliant. Congratulations on this, Papa. It really is.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you so much.
Mate, lovely having you on the show. So tonight, it's tomorrow night, I beg your pardon, Channel 5, tomorrow night, 9 p.m, episode 1, Anne Boleyn. Watch it. You will love it. But at the end of episode 2, oh, I can't wait for episode 3. All right, Papa, thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you,
Papa. Speak to you soon. Take care, mate.
Okay,
the best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Live music is slowly making a comeback and we couldn't be happier. The Live Revival documentary series concludes tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on Sky Arts. And here to tell us more is a man that knows exactly what side his musical bread is buttered. From a very sunny Glasgow, it's the Fratellis, John Fratelli! Morning, John!
Wow. I wish I could have that every morning.
we wish you could sing Whistle for the Choir for us every morning. That'd be a joy, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be a joy? Oh, John, lovely. So you got a very sunny Glasgow there.
It's gorgeous. It's really incredible. It just comes to life and it's like this.
John, I sat down in front of Sky yesterday and I watched this incredible documentary called The Live Revival. And I watched part one yesterday before talking to you today. And although it was euphoric, and listen, if you love music, you are going to... It's available on Sky Arts now, part one and part two. Part three is available tonight. I think it's tonight, 9 o'clock. Oh, tomorrow. But I watched it and not only was I entertained hugely by many of the musicians featured on it, but also I was totally heartbroken because that element of the music industry, the grassroots element, really is in trouble, isn't it?
Yeah, and God, where to start? That ecosystem is it's far bigger than I think most people would realise, you know, and myself included. You know, it's not just the musicians that play there. It's not just their own road crew that might come with them or local crew that might work in venues. You know, it's bar staff, it's door staff, it's the people who work in, you know, in every small venue around the country, there's a tiny little sort of, you could call it an office, but it's really, it's a cupboard usually where there's somebody in there throughout the day and night, you know, and basically behind the scenes as well. And you've got that replicated in towns and cities all over the country. And my son as well, you know, up until the pandemic, he worked at a music venue. So you know, he was another one who lost his job. And it's just, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said, God, it's frightening. Now, there's a sadness to it. And it was kind of a sadness to be in that venue, having played there before, you know, because there's not museums, you know, they're places that are supposed to be full of life, and they've been dead, you know. But you know, on the bright side, it's not too far away, is it? Hopefully, where these places can open up and everybody can go back to work.
But they need more support because obviously the pandemic's had this devastating effect on the music industry. But it's before the pandemic. It feels like these venues needed our support before the pandemic happened. So stripping it back to the bare bones of a musician's career. You start obviously in your bedroom with a guitar, then you might go to an open mic night in a pub, and then you get a good response to there, and then you move on to one of these grassroots venues. So without that, I mean, what happens to a musician's career? How would it work without them?
I have no idea, and it's not even just that. You know, even when we sort of finally got a record deal and we're in the position to start going out and tour. In the smallest of venues in the beginning all around the UK, there's a kind of system of tiers of sizes of venues, you know. So you play to, you know, 100 people maybe your first time around. And then if that tour's gone well, next time you play to maybe 150 to 200 people and so on and so on and so on. And it's always in small increments. And that's the thing, because if in a place like Glasgow, for instance, if only two venues and that sort of tier system were to close, then there's loads of bands going to find themselves, or artists find themselves, in a place where maybe they get to play into 500 people, but then the next step up in, a venue that's available is maybe 900 or 1,000, and that's too big a step up from 500, you know? Mm. So at this point, I'm just really hoping that that all stays intact, because that could really stifle things for a lot of people. You know, do they get stuck? Do they end up being stuck at a certain capacity? Because too many towns and cities, venues that they would normally have then lived up to have gone. You know, I hope that's not the case.
So, but you're going on a tour, aren't you, in September? You're actually doing an intimate tour in September.
Yeah, so we're doing... I think we're doing 8 shows around, just around the UK. And something we wanted to do in relation to the fact that you know, so many people in our industry are struggling, you know, and sort of closer to home as well. We wanted to do something whereby the profits, at least half of the profits, would go to our road crew, who've
right.
been with
That's
us
fantastic.
For a long time.
Great.
And the other half would be going to independent record stores around the country as well, because
Great.
they're another sort of part of the ecosystem that need the help.
That's it. And if bands like the Fratellis are doing that, then other bands will follow suit, and before we know it, then we'll get everybody back on their feet again. John, what an absolute pleasure talking to you.
We
can't wait to come and see you live.
Cool, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank
All right.
you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's forgotten more about the universe than you will ever know, but see him live and you might learn a bit. Tickets are on sale now for his Horizons, a 2021 Space Odyssey tour, so please welcome the space ace with a tremendous face. It's the always wonderful Professor Brian Cox.
Very good.
Morning, and I've got to say that the REM there, the end of the world as we know it, is the perfect introduction.
Oh, my God. Well, what
because,
are you... Well, yes.
Well, because, you know, when we talk about astronomy and cosmology, you know, we should the study of the universe, I think it's terrifying. And I think even, you know, professionals, the people who study it their whole lives, cannot get their head around the size and scale of the challenge. I mean, if I was to say to you, which is true as far as we know, but how do you feel that our galaxy alone, the Milky Way, has 400 billion stars like our sun?
I tell you what it does do, Brian, because I've had this thought process before. I tell you what, it makes me feel calm. And I'll tell you why. Because it makes me realise that nothing that we're experiencing on planet Earth, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but if you're ever stressed about a situation, I go, in the grand scheme of things,
yeah.
it's so minute compared to everything else going on around us. It actually calms me down a bit.
That's true. That's one way of looking at it. But actually, it's possible that there's only one civilization currently in the Milky Way galaxy, and that'd just be us. So suddenly, maybe you're not so relaxed, because if we mess this up, if we damage the planet, destroy ourselves, whatever we do, then it could be that we eliminate all meaning, all life in a galaxy of 400 billion stars, and it's our responsibility. So that's the other way of looking at it.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. How unbelievably important is what we are now doing as human beings to this planet? How important is it to the universe, to all these galaxies?
Well, I think we should operate on the basis that we are the only civilization currently in our galaxy.
But outside our Milky Way, I mean, the chance of there not being civilization elsewhere is low, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's what I want to talk about. You mentioned the tour earlier. It's really about getting together with these spectacular images of the universe and looking out and learning what we know about the universe and the origin and evolution of the universe and life. But then also trying to think about what it means. Because, you know, you don't find the meaning of it all in a textbook or through the end of a telescope. What it means is something that requires us all to think about our position and our lives, short and finite as they are. And that's the idea. It's a great feeling to sit there with, you know, hopefully 10,000, 12,000 people in a big room and all just consider these things that we often think about, you know, with a glass of wine on a dark night when we were students or whatever it was, and think about those things again.
And Dapper Dave was very excited about the size of your telly that you take on stage with you. You have a very big TV, don't you?
It's a big telly. It's about, to the horror of my promoter and everybody who wants to actually make some money, I make it very difficult for them to make money, because I said, well, what's the biggest screen we can fit in the O2? And of course, it's about 30 metres wide and 10 metres high or something like that.
Wow!
And it takes four trucks to carry it around. But what it does is, it when you look at these images of Saturn and Jupiter and galaxies taken by the Hubble Space Telescope, they look beautiful at that size. And no one, even the professional astronomers, you know, they sit and look at these things on their computer screens. But if you plaster them across the side of an arena with this ultra high resolution LED telly, which is basically what it is, then I think that sense of awe and wonder just ripples through the audience, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And I get that, you know, when we first set it up and I wander out to the back of the arena and look at it, it takes your breath away. It's an incredible thing.
Now, I have asked you this before, Brian, but I have a problem. I love looking at the sky at night. I know I've said this to you before, and my husband very kindly, as a surprise, bought me a telescope as a birthday present, but it doesn't seem to telescope. It doesn't seem to do it. And I know lots of kids love this as well. And I actually have got loads of friends who suddenly have found the sky again, especially over the past year. Can you just give us some top tips for doing this at home?
The moon's probably the easiest thing. So you can pretty much just by eye get your telescope, point it at the moon, focus it. And once you can do that, then you can swing around and start looking for the planets. And what happens is you get a feel for your own back garden, and you get a feel for how the sky changes over the year. And then you start saying, well, which planets are up tonight? And suddenly you enter this different world. I mean, Carl Sagan always said,
and is that
one of my great heroes, Carl Sagan, said that it's one of the wonderful things to, you look at those points of light in the sky, and the more you learn about them, the more magical they become. When you realize that those points of light are other worlds. Yeah. Yeah, they're stars, some of them are planets, but they're worlds with mountains and atmospheres and storms. And, you know, and it brings the night sky alive once you know a little bit about what you're looking at.
OK, so the tour starts on the 29th of September in Cardiff at the Motorpoint. I mean, huge venues, the O2 in London, Brighton Centre. And then in October, we're into Edinburgh and Aberdeen and Glasgow and Dublin, Belfast, Nottingham, the Motorpoint Arena, huge arena it is. Brian, do you ever get nervous for these things, for these events?
No, the great thing about those big arenas is that you honestly can't see anything. So I walk out on stage and I've got this huge screen behind me, which is really bright, so I can't see anyone. So the only reason, the weirdest thing is when I'm talking about these things, I'll say something and then I pause, and if it's completely silent, it's the opposite to a rock band, it's completely silent, then I get a bit of a wobble because I think, oh God, they're all listening.
You need some binoculars so you can see everybody, Brian. You should have your binoculars or your telescope out, and then you can see them.
Horizons, the 2021 Space Odyssey is Brian's tour. You can get your tickets available. You can get your tickets now, briancoxlive.co.uk. Brian Cox, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Brian.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Teenage girls are notoriously easy to understand and communicate with, but in case you're struggling, listen up. Her debut book, Mum, What's Wrong With You, is out next Thursday. And here with Why You Just Don't Understand Me is the brilliant Lorraine Candy.
Oh, lovely Lorraine. Hello.
Hello. Oh. I love that. That was great.
And it's a good introduction. Listen, have you done your cold water swim already today?
No. I'm waiting for the tide to come in for that, Gabby. So there's a bit more water for me. It's a bit colder.
Where do you live, Lorraine? Where do you live?
Actually, I'm on holiday in Cornwall at the moment, but normally I live in London, but I like a big dip in the sea as early as I can. It kind of refreshes me. Gabby knows about it.
Oh, she likes her cold water swimming. Yeah. She keeps saying that.
Do you, Gabby? Do you like cold
water? No, I don't. I like a...
She's not.
Nice warm bath.
I like a nice warm bath. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your book, Lorraine. It's brilliant. Mum, What's Wrong With You? As a mother of teenage girls, Sam's a father of soon-to-be teenage girls. One of my favourite things in the book was the surprise signs you suddenly have a teenager. It's so true. It literally creeps up on you, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's a bit of a shock, isn't it? One minute you're putting them to bed in their little unicorn nighty parties and they're being, they love you to death and you're the most important person in the world. And then the next minute, they can't bear the sound of your breathing in the kitchen in the morning. So it's a,
that's so right.
It's a surprise.
Oh, it's so right. I remember my eldest, she went to bed and she said, "Night, night, mummy." And she came out, "Yeah, mum." And it literally went from mummy to mum, and it, something happened overnight. It was extraordinary.
I think it's so funny that you just said they can't stand the sound of my breathing.
No.
Because if you're annoyed by somebody, even them breathing is annoying.
Breathing, yeah. Eating. Mum, what are you eating? What are you doing?
Or singing. You can't even hum under your breath because that's a terrible crime for teenagers.
You can't be happy. You can't be happy.
No,
you're what do your teenage daughters think of you writing this book, and have they read it?
Well, they have, yeah. They're 18 and 17. And obviously they read it, and the thing they always say about anything I ever remember is, well, that never happened, which is what they say about everything. But I mean, I tried to protect as much of their privacy as possible, and it's a lot of expert interviews as well. But it's humorous, and there are, you know, I do explain why it's happening. They haven't just turned into terrible people overnight. Their brains are being completely rebuilt, their hormones are flooding in, so there's lots and lots of reasons that they turn into what I call meanagers. At some point, it's all so much for them. I mean, I don't know if you can remember being a teenager, but between the ages of 12 and 17, it's phenomenal change. So it's quite a lot to deal with.
But the lovely thing is, they do come back again because my eldest is 19 and she's back again, and it's lovely to see her getting through that. But this book is also, you talk about some very really important issues like addressing bullying and teen anxiety, and these things, you know, they are so vitally important and really important that we talk about them as well.
I think it's really important that we understand what's going on for everybody, and then we can learn to listen to them. Because the one thing I learned from all the people I talk to is that as mums and dads, you just want to solve everything. You want to put everything right. And sometimes they don't really want that. They want you to listen to them. And the language they use, is especially around anxiety, the language around anxiety is really important, I think, getting it right. But sometimes it's more sadness and low mood and other things. Just if you don't sit and listen to them and let them get it off their chest, it's very hard for them to deal with all that emotion and all the things going on inside them. And I learned so much from talking to so many experts who'd worked with adolescents in mental health that it really made me take a step back as a parent and stop trying to fix everything, to solve everything. Actually, Sam, dads are particularly guilty of solving everything because they like to be the sort of experts on getting things done for their teenagers, especially daughters.
The fixer, the mender, because often my wife will say, have a problem, and she'll say something to me, and I'll go, okay, so what you need to do is this. She goes, no, I don't want a solution, mate. I just want you to go, oh, okay, give me a hug or whatever, or talk about it, but not find a solution. I'm exactly the same with my girls already because Evie is 12 and she's a hippie. She's the most chilled out child you've ever met in your life. So do all kids become meanagers, or have I got a chance with her?
No, I think the meanager syndrome is particularly pertinent to mums and daughters, actually, because they have to be their own identity. So they sort of have to reject your identity, and in doing that, like, it can be quite mean, but it's just a lot of change for them to deal with. I think they're all different as well. I think we do often generalize, don't we, and say all teenagers are this, but all this happening to their minds and bodies in a very short period of time can make them quite unpredictable. So they'll all go through a bit of a bumpy road. You've just got to, so someone that once said to me, you've just got to hold on to the rope that they're holding the other end of while they go through these bumps all the way through adolescence.
Lorraine, what's so brilliant is that Sam came in this morning and said, I read that book and it's so good. It's good for dads, and it's good, you know, of course, if there's a single parent out there, it's just good for everybody to just understand what's going on in a teenage brain. It's not just a book for mums. It's a book for everybody. Sam was reading on the tube yesterday.
I was reading on the tube, and I think it's important for dads to read just to understand teenage girls more, but also understand your partner more, and also to show alliance to your partner. That you're with them and you know that what they're going through is tough, and it's not as tough for the dads because of the relationship with the fathers. But I was reading on the tube yesterday, and the mum on the tube did look over and look and smiled at me and thought, yeah, there you go, 10 points, 10 points, mate. I'm having a little read, working it all out. It's a fabulous book, Lorraine. Thank you so much for coming on the show. The book is called Mum, What's Wrong With You? And it's now in the hands of my wife, who is obviously the mum of a near teenage daughter. Great book.
Oh, well, good luck.
All right.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. Lovely to speak
to you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's here with her twist on food, glorious food and more that'll leave you wanting more. Her latest book, 2 Weeks to Feeling Great, is out now. So if your mood's swinging low, are losing when it comes to snoozing, or have woken up staring at the wrong end of a bottle of wine, listen up to the wonderful Gabriella Peacock.
Morning, Gabriella.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, hello. Does anyone ever call you Gabby?
Everybody calls me Gabby. Yes.
Oh, Gabby. Well,
hello, Gabby.
Gabby.
Listen, we've been talking all morning about kimchi. Can you just tell Sam the wonders of kimchi? You're the woman that knows everything. You're a nutritionist. You can tell. In your book, it's all about sleeping. It's the supplements. It's how to eat, what to eat, good for the gut. Can you just tell Sam how good kimchi is, please?
Kimchi, it's fantastic. Well, because it's a probiotic, so it has all these amazing microorganisms which then improve your digestion. But yeah, kimchi is one of them. You also have kefir, you know, the sauerkraut, you know, also live yogurt. So yeah, probiotics are great.
Yeah, so yeah, but hang on, Gabriel. I heard that kimchi is gone off cabbage. Is it?
It's fermented.
And that's good for your gut. That's seriously good for your gut.
It is. It's just a differently prepared than the sauerkraut would be. I believe it's an Asian influence, so they put chilies in there as well as the sugars to promote the fermentation. Yeah,
well,
it's great.
Absolutely delicious. It's brilliant, and it's good for your gut. But you've got so much in your book. So you've got about detoxifying as well. So that's a word that we always hear, and people are slightly worried about the whole idea of detoxifying, aren't they?
They are, but I think, you know, being able to talk about detoxification and liver cleanse, it's really important because what I very much believe in, you know, we should be able to live our lives, and with life comes hangovers. So support detoxification is really, really important, especially if you want to enjoy your life and, you know, enjoy one or two glasses of red wine.
Indeed we do, especially on a bank holiday Monday.
But also you talk about that you can eat lemons and berries. You see, that just makes me happy. All of these things make you happy. And then also you talk about sleep in your book and how important sleep is.
It is. And, the way I try to design my book, and hopefully I have achieved, it's just to make a simple, simple guide for people. I found that there's so many wonderful information about nutrition, because it's, you know, it's quite fashionable to be, you know, to do health things, and the word wellness is extremely fashionable at the moment, but it can almost be too confusing. So what I really try to create is a simple, accessible guide which deliver people results, so you can find yourself in a different chapters if you want to improve your sleep or rebalance your hormones or lose some weight. This should give you easy answers.
Well, also, talking the word easy, you've got in here cheats pizza. Now, pizza is just, it's everybody's favourite. It really is. Don't you, Sam, you're looking at me. You're licking your lips.
Oh, I love a pizza.
This is a cheats pizza. It's gluten-free as well, because I have a real allergy, a proper real allergy.
Yeah, you do.
But it's, I love it. It's tablespoons of tomato puree and garlic, mozzarella, sun-dried tomato. See, I'm salivating now.
That's great, isn't it? The thing is about this is that a friend of mine once said to me, who really cares about what he eats, putting rubbish in your body is a bit like putting diesel in a petrol car. And in fact, you know when you go to a petrol station, you get the super, super unleaded and the super, super unleaded? The super, super unleaded is what you should put in your car because it is better for your engine. And I suppose it's the same with us as human beings, what we are, what we eat, yada, yada, yada. We've heard that before. But you can do some serious damage. If you don't, when I first moved to London, I found coffee shops for the first time. I never drank coffee before I moved down here about 5 years ago, and I became obsessed with lattes, and I would have extra large lattes five times a day, and I got IBS because, and I went to the doctors, and the first thing that she said to me was, well, has your diet changed? I said, well, I love lattes. And she said, how many do you have? And I said, I have five a day. And she said, well, that's like 5 pints of milk, Sam.
You're putting lots of milk.
It's a lot of milk. I'm surprised I didn't start mooing. But the steroids in milk, your stomach is not cut out for that, apparently. I stopped immediately, and the IBS went immediately.
Well, if you get Gabby's book, 2 weeks to feeling great, in 2 weeks you'll feel great.
I feel great. You're not a fan of milk then, Gabriella.
not a huge fan of milk. I don't have an issue with dairy products in general, but milk is quite hard to digest, especially cow's milk. They're quite big molecules. And we just tend to overdo certain substances. I do a lot of different blood tests with my patients in my clinic, and it's the milk, it's the dairy, and generally wheat, which causes a problem. And that's purely because we just overeat them. So I don't have an issue with a little bit of milk in your morning coffee, but once you start drinking a few pints of milk, you will develop some kind of intolerances. So yes, I'm pro-life yogurts and bits of cheese if you want to. But yeah, just watch yourself with milk, and especially inorganic milk, because that's where you start getting all the hormones from.
Inorganic milk?
Unorganic milk, yes.
Oh, so you have to get organic.
You have to get organic. Okay,
so, Gabrielle, come on, you've got to be naughty. Sam was asking me earlier. I'm naughty with ice cream. But so, come on, what's your naughty thing?
No, but I'm going to say it's a red wine, obviously. It's a red wine and some chocolate, I would say. But again, you know, life, it's about balance. Life, it's about living. And I eat pretty well, and I take many supplements to rebalance my potential hangovers.
Potential hangovers. Gabrielle, I love the reviews on the back of your book. Donna Eyre, I wish I'd known everything in this book years and years ago. Jodie Kidd says, I had no idea Feeling Great was going to be this easy. And James Blunt says, I probably need this book. I love it. The book is called 2 Weeks to Feeling Great. It's by Gabriella Peacock. Get it wherever you get your books from and turn your life around in 2 weeks. Sound about right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you, Gabs. Bye, darling.
Thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Like the weather, this F1 season is heating up quite nicely. And what better way to enjoy it than under the commentary parasol of our next guest? That's right. The Azerbaijan Grand Prix is live and exclusive on Sky Sports F1 this Sunday. And here to tell us all about it is the bar coolest cat in town. It's Crofty.
Morning, Crofty.
Morning, Sam. Morning, Gab.
Good morning, Crofty.
Where are you now? Right now, Crofty. Where are you speaking to us right now from?
Right now, I'm in my hotel bedroom, which is on the 8th floor, overlooking the main straight of the track in Baku, because it's like a city circuit. So on Sunday, cars will be going past my hotel room at round about 220 miles an hour.
Wow.
Just like that.
That's so cool. That was timing.
It was very good. He does it with his mouth. Okay, Crofty, can we, before we talk about the Grand Prix, can we please talk about the subscription that I know that you had, and I don't know if you still have, and people might not know that you had this.
Is this the sausage subscription?
Yep. So we worked together many years ago, about 10 years ago, and you admitted to me live on air that you had a subscription to something, and you said, please don't say it on air. So of course I said it on air. So 10 years later, I'm saying it on air again. Do you still have your sausage subscription?
I am sad to say I have let my sausage subscription lapse.
Crofty.
I know. I was a member of the Sausage Club, which I know sounds like a really good night out for many people. But it basically got me free sausages every month for a whole year. I had it for a few years. It was like the best birthday present. I think I got it for my 40th birthday that I was ever given. But now I have to go like every ordinary man, woman and child and buy my sausages at a farm shop or supermarket. The Sausage Club is...
Do you know, what's so lovely, Crofty, is that no one here knew about this and now I've revealed your past dirty
secret. I want it. I want a sausage subscription. I wonder if you can still get them. I can't even say it, but I want it.
It was brilliant. Like sausages sent to your door every month for a whole year. Nothing better.
We get pasta delivered to our door every Thursday evening.
It's not the same as a sausage subscription.
Of course it's not. So, Crofty, can we talk about last weekend before we talk about this weekend? Because last weekend, Monaco Grand Prix, is it fair to say that it was a pretty tragic weekend for Lewis? I mean, nobody else would say that about any other driver because Lewis always wins. What happened to Lewis Hamilton?
Well, his car wasn't at its best for a start. To put it in technical terms, he lacked front end grip when he was turning in, i.e. when he made his steering input into the corner, it didn't do what he wanted it to, and he had to slow down a bit more than others did. He also suffered from the Carlos Sainz podium horrors for him. Whenever Carlos Sainz gets on the podium, and he's done it 3 times in Formula One, Lewis Hamilton's finished 7th on every occasion.
Is that right?
So, I'm blaming Carlos Sainz this morning for this one.
Right.
Yeah, it was a horror for him. I mean, seventh is all right for most people, but not for Lewis. The thing is, though, Sam, as neutral observers as we are, it might have been a shocker for Lewis, but it's great for the championship.
Yes.
Because now Red Bull lead the constructors, and Max Verstappen, for the first time in his life, is ahead in the Drivers' Championship. There's only a few points in it. It's brilliant.
It's great for the sport. I've got to say, because my wife Catherine loves F1, but she always says the reason that I'm a bit bored of it at the moment is because Lewis wins. She wants to see a bit more of this at the top.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't care who comes out on top, as long as it's close all year round.
Yeah.
So this weekend should be a Red Bull circuit again, but we might have the limbo wing protest. You know, we talked about limbo wings before, the rear wing that basically it kind of stalls on a straight and it reduces drag, therefore the cars go faster. So we might get a few protests for that. Red Bull have been running them, Mercedes haven't.
Right.
Red Bull should have a faster car here. Mercedes could be struggling, but then when we get back to France, that should be Mercedes territory. And we'll have these swings and roundabouts all season long, I think, because Mercedes are not upgrading their car anymore, and I don't think Red Bull will do much either.
And is that because it's another city circuit this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But what you've got here is a very, very long straight. It's over a kilometre and a half long down the main straight. There we go again. And that will help the Red Bull, because the Red Bull's got, I think, more top speed, possibly helped by the limbo wing. We'll see if they run it or not and if it makes any difference.
And Max Verstappen. I love Max Verstappen. Have you seen Drive to Survive, Gabs? The series Drive to Survive?
No, I haven't.
So you should watch it because you'll love it. Even if you're not into F1, it will get you into F1.
Chris keeps going on about it and Rachel, so I will.
It's so good.
No, I love F1. I love it.
It's just so beautifully produced. But one thing that I love about it is that you get to meet the drivers and get to understand the drivers and what makes them tick. And Max Verstappen seems to have this look in his eyes like he's never going to be yours or anyone else's best friend, but he's always going to win. He's going to go out there to win. He's got this killer instinct to him.
Yeah, and that killer instinct, I think, is coming to the fore this year. I've never seen Max look more chilled, more calm, more calculated, and more knowing that he's got a very good car underneath him that can give him that championship. You know, if he was to play a movie star at the moment, he'd be the Bond villain.
Yeah, he would.
That's great.
That those laser sharks are going to wipe out 007. You know, he's got that look. So
Where was it when he grabbed somebody, grabbed another driver backstage after the Grand Prix? He wasn't very happy with what happened. He physically went over and grabbed one and grabbed him, as in, you do that again, pal, I'll knock your head off.
It was Brazil. It was Interlagos a few years ago. It was Esteban Ocon was the other driver, and they had a bit of fisticuffs by the weighing bridge because Ocon tried to get past and unlap himself and crashed into Verstappen and cost him the victory.
That's right. Verstappen wasn't happy, but he's feisty.
So if he's the James Bond villain, who's James Bond of the drivers then?
Lewis Hamilton.
Oh,
is it Lewis?
Yeah, I think so. I think it probably is Lewis Hamilton.
He's such a hero.
Suave and sophisticated.
He's such a hero.
And he is a hero.
Oh.
But he's got this villain. He's got this villain who's currently in the lead. He's currently beating him.
It's just like a James Bond
film. Oh, it is, Gabs. It is.
In Azerbaijan. It's perfect setting for James Bond.
It is. Oh, thanks for coming on, mate. You take care of yourself. Lots of sunscreen.
Lots of sausages.
Sunscreen and sausages. Crofty's out book. It'll be out soon. Take care, buddy. Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The best bits from the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky. Chris will be back next week. And don't forget, subscribe now and you'll never miss a week of the Brekkie Show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.